Okay, I left you off yesterday discussing kamos ve'echos b'mitzvos, so you did the right thing. Most of you told me that you were looking for the underlying connection between the Maharal and all those kamos ve'echos cases that Rav Yosef Engel discusses, and seeing like, do they fit with the Maharal, do they contradict the Maharal? To be totally honest, I didn't go that far in terms of my own thinking about it. I just thought, oh cool, this is another kamos ve'echos example. But what I will point out is as follows. I think the Maharal takes it a step further than any of the examples Rav Yosef Engel gives. Because when Rav Yosef Engel discusses kamos versus echos, when he discusses quantity versus quality, Rav Yosef Engel's primary focus is when you do multiple, let's say, small averos, let's say that you'd be chayav malchus for, so you will get multiple malchios. Question is, when you have to make that choice of doing multiple averos that you chayav malchus for, eating multiple kazesim of nevela, or should I do one big avera? That's his question. Which one should I choose to do? But he never ever suggests in any of his sources that if I do, let's say, I eat 30 kazesim of nevela, that Bezin is going to say, we can't give him malchus, we should just kill him. We never change the onesh based on kamos. Maharal is the only one, and Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, obviously, we're the only ones that said that that's what's going on by Ben Sora Mora. And that, I think, still makes Ben Sora Mora completely unique. Even though of the 26 rayas Rav Yosef Engel has, and some of you saw probably more than I did, in terms of just all the rayas, he has, I think, 15 of them come down on the side of kamos, that quantity is bigger than quality. He never takes that step to say that's, he's only discussing making a decision, which one should I do, or which one is considered worse, which one makes me a bigger Russia, but never takes that step to say that you're actually going to get a more severe onesh. The closest he comes is in example number, get there in a second. Closest he comes, yeah, is an example, Zion. Look at Zion. He quotes Rashi and Yevamos, where the Gemara says that, we know the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that there were multiple Bate Kvaros, there were different cemeteries for people who were chayiv different misas. So for a skila strefa, there was one cemetery, because that's really bad rishayim. Harik v'chenek is another cemetery, because that's for lesser rishayim. And we know the halacha is that you're not allowed to bury a tzaddik etzal rasha. That's still a halacha, that we don't bury a tzaddik next to a rasha. That's why it's considered to be a great schus to be buried next to a tzaddik. Because if you're buried next to a tzaddik, that says something about you. That's why if you ever go visit Har Menuchos in Eretz Yisrael, there's what they call the chelek harabanim, where Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Yisrael Salman Meltzer, and you know, a lot of the great Torah luminaries are buried there, and that's because they're trying to keep the tzaddikim in the same neighborhood. So the Gemara over there says that they would have one for the Ne'aragin and Nechnakin, one for the Neskalin and Nesrachin. So the Gemara in Yevama says someone who did something for which he's chayiv both. Someone who's Baal in Eshes Ach, someone who's Baal his brother's wife, so she is Usher for two reasons. Number one, she's an Eshes Ish. Number two, she's an Erva of Eshes Ach. She's an Erva of being Karov. So he did two Averos, which are both Chayiv lesser penalties, and we bury him together with the Niskal and Vinisrathin. That's a Holva of Etarti. Since it was two Averos, he gets buried with the Niskal and Vinisrathin. But he doesn't actually get skila resreva. He only gets buried within the skull of the Nisrafin. So even that doesn't take it quite as far as the Maharal took it. The Maharal said it actually changes, you know, in explaining Ben Sora Mora, that it actually changes the onesh you're going to get. Even that, he didn't change the onesh that you're going to get. He had several examples that I thought were interesting just in terms of Yedias and Shas that are good to have. For instance, he quotes from the Gemara Maseches Yuma, talks about the Shnei Marachos al Gabi HaMizbeach. So it's good to know, it's good to use these examples just because they're not difficult to understand, but it gives you just a broader idea. So I'm sure you've heard the phrase, Maracha Gedola Kodemus the Maracha Shneel Shel Kedores. Sounds familiar, right? Maracha Gedola comes before the Maracha Shneel Shel Kedores. What does that mean? So on top of the Mizbeach, there were two giant piles of wood. No, there was one giant pile of wood and one small pile of wood. Those are called the Ma'arachos. So the giant pile of wood was made to make a giant fire, and on that fire they would burn pretty much everything that had to be burnt on the Mizbeach. All the limbs of the various karbanos, Haktar Seymurim, the Karban Ola, all the parts of the Karban Ola, everything was burnt on that giant fire on top of the Mizbeach. But then off to the side, they had a smaller fire. That was in the center of the Mizbeach. Off to the side, there was a smaller fire, Marach HaShniyah Shel Ketores. The Marach HaShniyah Shel Ketores was called Marach HaShniyah Shel Ketores because all it was used for was to make the coals from which they're going to burn the Ketores. What do you mean burn the Ketores? The Ketores was not burnt on the Mizbeach. Where was on the big Mizbeach? Where was the Ketores burnt? On the Mizbeach Hazav, inside in the Heichal, in the Kodesh, what we call the Kodesh, in the holier part of the Beis HaMikdash. So what do? They would burn these logs in Marach HaShniyah, in the small fire on top of the Mizbeach. Then they would take a shovel full of coals, the logs would turn to coals, they would take a shovel full of the coals, they would go into the Heichal, by the small Mizbeach, put it on the small Mizbeach, and burn the Ketores on that. So the entire function of the Marach HaShniyah was Shel Ketores, was to be used to burn the Ketores. So the Gemara over there says, well, wait a second, why is it that we set up the Marach Gedola before we set up the Marach HaShniyah Shel Ketores? Why do we set up the big pile of wood before we set up the small pile of wood? So says the Gemara, the big pile of wood has to come first because there's a Pasuk. Pasuk says, Hi Ha'ola Al Mokta, and that's referring to a pile of wood, that must be the big pile of wood. And then the next phrase, Ve'esha Mizbeach Tukat Bo, that must be referring to the small pile of wood because it's talking about a different pile of wood, so it must be talking about the small pile of wood. So says the Gemara, that's ridiculous. You just have two phrases about a pile of wood. How do you know that the first one is about the big one and the second one is about the small one? Epochana. Maybe it's the reverse. Maybe the first phrase is about the small pile of wood, second phrase is about the big pile of wood. Says the Gemara, no. This is the reason we know that you got to set up the big one first. Because the big one does everything. It does all the heavy lifting. It burns everything. It burns all the karbanos. It's mechaper for so many different things. The small one has its own advantage, namely that you actually take from the small one and bring lefnim. You go into the Kodesh with the stuff that you get from the small one. So qualitatively, the small one is better. It's more kadosh. It has a higher purpose. But quantitatively, the bigger one is much more important because the bigger one does all the heavy lifting. It does so much. It burns all these different karbanos. So says Rav Yosef Engel, that's a classic example of kamos versus eichos, advantage, kamos. Right? Quantity wins over quality. That's why we set up the bigger pile of wood instead of the smaller pile of wood. That is Rav Yosef Engel. So many, many of his examples, a lot of the ones, I think all the ones we did so far, are actually Kamos-related examples. Just to mention, actually no, the one that we did that was Eichos-related was the Tzitzis one that we mentioned yesterday. Just to mention one or two more before we move on that I thought were interesting. Os Yud Ches, he writes, Shamati Omrim. He says, I heard people say the following vort. The vort is as follows. When Avram Avinu tells Sarah, you need to tell them that you are my sister. Why does he tell Sarah, you need to tell them that you are my sister? So he says, because if you don't, vahargu'osi va'osachi chayu, they're going to kill me to take you. So says Rav Yosef Engel, why would they kill Avram to take Sarah? Why don't they just take Sarah to take Sarah and let Avram, ride away somewhere outside of the palace where he can't get there anyway? Why would they have to kill him? So I can't believe for a moment that this is actually pshat on any level. But he says that, other than the most drushy kind of level, so it's not pshat, it's drash, but he says that maybe Avram Avinu was doing the following cheshbon. Paro's a guy, so he has a choice. He has this terrible yetzer hara for Arayos, for Znus. So he desperately is going to want this beautiful woman. He's definitely going to want Sarah. So he's going to violate an Avera to get her. But he has a choice which Avera to violate. He could either violate the Avera of killing me, and then he'll have Sarah, she'll be free, she'll be single again, so he could take her and keep her. Or he could leave me alive, and every single time he sleeps with her, violate an Avera of Eishes Ish. That's his choice. So Avraham Avinu says, you know what I think he's going to choose? He's going to choose to kill me. Why? Killing is a worse Avera than sleeping with her. For Ben Noach, killing is worse than sleeping with a married woman. But sleeping with him. If he leaves Avram alive, he's going to be sleeping with a married woman over and over again. Every time he sleeps with her, she's still going to be a married woman. So Mistama, Paro is going to be a Lamdan, and he's going to choose that he should kill me, violate the one Avera, rather than the many Averas. So says Rav Zengel, if that's true, if that Cheshbon is really correct, you see that quantity beats quality. Highly questionable, obviously, because there are a lot of other good reasons why he would want to kill Avram Avinu. He may want to get rid of the competition. It's not an cheshbening of Veros. He doesn't want Sarah to be thinking every time that he's with her, oh, I wish I was still with Avram. If Avram's dead, she'll get over him. He'll be nishtakach min alev after a while. Yeah?
Who said the killings
are from the Arias? So he says, for Ben Noach, he writes, one second. Yeah, Shvichas Damim is Sayef, Eshes Ish is Chenek. So Sayef or Chenek, he says Sayef is worse. That is actually Machlokas Tanaim. And he says, it could be, there is a Shita. He says, that's only according to how we paskin. Rabbi Shimon actually holds in Sanhedrin Mem Tesson Beis that Chenek is more chumer than Sayef. Then Eshes Ish is more chumer, then it's really a no-brainer. Because then it's doing one time the lesser Avera versus many times the greater Avera. So according to Rabbi Shimon, you're right, then it would be flipped, but then it would be Pashut, it would be a no-brainer. The other major Shasugya that Rabbi Yosef Engel discusses is an Osiyah Tess. It's a major Shasugya, and that is a Sugya of Tadir Mekudash. We're familiar with the rule from Halacha, we're probably most familiar with it from, or the Gemara that you most likely learned at some point in your lives that relates to Tadir is in the 10th paragraph of Maseches Pesachim, that Tadir v'sheino Tadir, Tadir Kodem. That's always a rule, that whenever you have two mitzvahs to do, you always do the more Tadir one first. There is another rule that's less known to us, because it doesn't come up in Halacha as much in terms of which bracha to make over Kiddush, Yak Nahaz, that whole, it doesn't come up as much in terms of which tefillah to daven first, things like that. But there is another Halacha called, Mekudosh Shishen and Mekudosh Kodem. That if you have a choice to bring two karbanos, you bring the more Kadosh one first. So the Gemara says, Gemara has a Shaila, Nibayidul Ifshita, in Zvachim, an unresolved Shaila. What if you have a Tadir versus a Mekudash? You have one mitzvah to do that comes up more frequently, and the other mitzvah that's more Mekudash. That's a holier mitzvah. So what do you do then? So the Gemara doesn't know. The Gemara leaves it as Nibai Delivshita. So it says Rav Yosef Engel, that's exactly our Shaila. Mekudash means qualitatively better. Tadir means quantitatively better. Isn't that, it's a perfect match for our Shaila. For quantity versus quality. Then he says he's not sure. He says it could be that Tadir is a reflection of the quality of the Avera, of the quality of the mitzvah. That if there's a mitzvah that Hashem wants you to keep on doing, it's not a mitzvah that you choose to do over and over again. Our discussion is, if I choose to do something multiple times, is that better than choosing to do one bigger mitzvah? Or if I choose to do a bunch of smaller Averas, is that better or worse than choosing to do one big Avera? But maybe if HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you must make Kiddush every Shabbos, you must say Kriya Shema twice a day, every day, maybe that by definition shows you that it's qualitatively different. The fact that Hashem wants it so much maybe tells you about the quality of it. Not just the quantity. But quantity is when I choose to do it many times. So I did the mitzvah many times. But when Hashem says you must do it many times, maybe that's a quality issue. And therefore he says maybe Tadir Mekudosh is quality versus quality. It's not quality versus quantity. I'll give you an example. What's the difference between quantity and tadir? Let's say you have Shagas Aryeh discusses in the tshuva. I must have mentioned this at some point in the past. I know I've mentioned it in the past. I don't know if any of you were here when I mentioned it in the past. But the Shagas Aryeh is a tshuva where he discusses it's during Sfiras Omer. And when I say sometime in the past, it might have been 2 days ago. I have no recollection of what I said to you. But it's during the period of Sfiras Omer, right? And you make early Shabbos. So it's a Shabbos in May, you make early Shabbos. So you come home from shul, it's still light outside. You eat your meal, and now it's time to bench, and it's dark outside already. Now you've got three mitzvahs that you have to do. What three mitzvahs do you have to do? Shema, benching, and Sfira. So what order should you do it in? So it says, Shagas Aryeh, Tadir V'Sheinu Tadir Kodem, right?
do whichever one comes most commonly. So what's most commonly? What's the tadir? Shema first, then benching, then Sfira. That's the order you should do. What if you happen to wash for three meals a day? So you actually bench three meals a day, three times a day. You say Shema twice a day. Should we then say, do benching first and then Shema? Should we say benching then Shema? So the Shagazari says, Pasha not. Why not? Because you chose to bench three times a day. That doesn't make a tadir. Now, and that's based on the Gemara. The Gemara says, Matsui lo amrinan, tadir ka amrinan. If you look in the sugyan, Zvachim Peites, that's where the major sugyan, Matsui lo amrinan, tadir ka amrinan. Matsui and tadir are different. Well, why are they different? If I do it so much, doesn't that make it more important? So, Elamai, the answer is no. What makes tadir special is that Hashem's telling you He wants you to do it so much. That's what makes it special. Not the fact that you happen to do it so much. It's that Hashem wants you to do it so much. That's the uniqueness of tadir. It reminds me very much of the Machlokas Rishonim about why it is that Gadol HaMitzuvah V'Yose Yoser Mimi She'enu Mitzuvah V'Yose. Every Bar Mitzvah boy is drasha. The old time it was my drasha at least. Gadol HaMitzuvah V'Yose Yoser Mimi She'enu Mitzuvah V'Yose. It's better to be commanded and do a mitzvah rather than to not be commanded and do a mitzvah. So the Rishonim have a discussion. Why? Why is it better? So Tulsa says because you have a Yetzer Hara to not do it when you're commanded. You don't have a Yetzer Hara to not do it when you're not commanded. That's why it's better. Tulsa says, or maybe it's because you have pressure. You have pressure when it's expected of you. When it's not expected of you, you don't have that experience of pressure, so it's from Tzara Agra. So you didn't go through so much trouble because you never felt pressure. It was, you know, it was good. Whatever you do is good. It was good if you do, good if you don't. So it was fine. You didn't feel that sense of pressure. Says the Ritva, my favorite answer. The Ritva says, no, Gadol Mitzvah V'Yose, because Hashem told you He wants it. He demands it. So obviously, if Hashem says, I demand that you do this, I don't demand that you do this, or I don't demand that another person does this, obviously He wants you to do it, and He doesn't really care that much if the other person does it. If He's commanding it, it's because He wants it. And that's what makes it special. It's a very similar idea. I think what drives tadir is the fact that Hashem is demanding it of us. If it's just matzui, but it's not a demand of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, so then it's just matzui, it's not tadir. Then it doesn't have that same level of kedusha. Another example that I think is worthwhile doing because it's going to set up a later sugya, oschaf. Take a look at oschaf. We paskin in kol haTorah kula, yavrval yaharik. Everywhere in Torah, you don't get yourself killed; just violate the avera rather than get yourself killed. Ubegimel averos, yaharik val yavar. There are three times where we say Yaharik Val Yavar. Why? Apparently because those three are really bad. They're so bad that you have to get killed rather than violate them. What if you have someone that comes to you and says, listen, wear shatnez or I'm going to kill you. So what do? You wear shatnez, right? What if he says, wear shatnez every day or I'm going to kill you. Every day for the rest of your life. First time I see you not wearing shatnez, you will get killed. So you just take the bullet now rather than wear shatnez every day? Say you're a young man, you're 19, 20, 21 years old, you figure I got another 100 years to go. Every day, 100 years times 365, that's a lot of averos. Do we ever say that the kamus is going to ever rise to that level of Yaharik Val Yavar? Never happens. It doesn't rise to Yaharik Val Yavar. That L'chorah tells us that no matter how much kamus you have, it never equals the Eichus. It will never rise to the level of the Eichus. Now, you could argue that if someone makes you repeatedly do an Avera, then it could get in, we'll have to see when we get to Yaharik Val Yavar, then it could get into the category of Chilul Hashem, because he's just interested in your Averos, and making you do Averos. And the Gemara says, that even if a guy makes you change your shoelaces to make a Chilul Hashem, to dress like a guy, even though there's no technical Avera, that would then rise to Yaharik Val Yavar. So you could argue that maybe it would rise to Yaharik Val Yavar if he insists on changing for the rest of your life
doing something for the rest of your life, not just violating Avera, but to do it forever. But still, what if he just says for the next 10 days? Why isn't 10 Averas become Yahar Galiyah? We never say that. Yeah.
In general, like the example yesterday with like the Nevela, or I guess in this case, is it still considered an Avera if you're if you go off Nevesh and you're supposed to eat the Nevela, you have to, then it's not really an Avera anymore to do it. Or are you doing Avera, but it's okay?
Yeah, so there is a concept of achilu no sava kala kal tchila, that when you have to violate Shabbos, or to save someone's life, or to violate any avera to save someone's life, even though it's mutter, but you're supposed to choose the least usher thing. Like, had it not been pikuach nefesh, what would be the smallest avera? That's what you use to save their life. That's how we have to do the analysis. So what we're choosing as the smallest avera, what the Ran is choosing as the smallest avera, is shechting the animal rather than eating multiple nevelos. Even though at the end of the day it's a mitzvah. It's not an avera, it's a mitzvah, because you're saving a life. But the way you have to run the analysis is, which method of saving his life am I going to choose? Whatever, had it not been pikuach nefesh, would have been the smaller avera.
So if you choose the wrong one, then you're doing an
avera. Right, okay. Right. You mean qualify, meaning give a quality measure to mitzvos. Yeah, but yet, we do have, when it comes to triage on mitzvos, you have to choose one over the other. We do it. Asei do chalos asei. We give different onshim, and that generally is assumed to be a measure of their quality. We say, have izahir kemitzvah kala kebechamur, the Mishnah says. That you have to be as careful about doing a mitzvah kala like chamur. You don't know exactly what the schar is going to be, but you do know what the onesh is for averos. So on some level, we do measure them against each other. He has an interesting application of Schafal. If he says beishamay beisila is a quantity versus quality, so beishamay were higher quality talmidei chacham, and they were mechad ditfei, they were much sharper, whereas beisila was higher quantity. They were the rove. They always had the majority. So that's a quantity versus quality issue. When you have the majority opinion versus the smartest people, you could argue that that's not really quantity quality, that's about getting it right. Where are you more likely to get the correct answer? If you have a whole bunch of people that you have, let's say you have a focus group of 10 people that are able to discuss the issue and each one throw out ideas and discuss, versus one brilliant person. So you could argue that you're likely to arrive at MS with the 10 people who have a seichel ayashar more than you will with the one brilliant person. So that might be about arriving at emes more than quantity quality. So it's a bit of a reach to discuss Beshame Besilel in terms of quality quantity. He also discusses Chil Shabbos. The Gemara says in Maseches Yuma, the reason why you're Mechal Shabbos save a life is because Chalel of Shabbos Achas Kadei Shishmar Shabbosos Harbe. Be Mechal Shabbos from once so that he'll be able to observe many Shabbosos. Well, when he observes many Shabbosos, he's going to b'shev v'alta say he'll be observing Shabbos. He's not going to be violating Averos. He'll be making Kiddush. But the one Avera that you're doing by saving his life is an Isra Skila. And yet we still say it's worth it. So apparently, the quantity wins over the quality in that case as well. And one final one, the last one we just mentioned, Os Chavav, the last one that he mentions, in Hilchos Shalashudis, in Shulchan Aruch. So what if you don't have enough food for proper Shalashudis? Should you split up your food in such a way, in three portions, where none of your meals are going to be proper meals? Or is it better to have two really good gezunta meals, and leave one uneaten? Don't eat Shalashudis. Which is better? Have two quality meals, or higher quantity, three meals, none of them high quality? So the Magen Avraham, in Sim Reish Sadi Aleph, writes in the name of Sefer Chassidim that it's better to eat two quality meals and leave aside the third one. So that seems to be a raya that quality wins. Says Rav Yosef Engel, terrible raya. It's not a good raya that quality wins. Why? Because the first two meals of Shabbos are taken much more seriously than the third meal of Shabbos. Third meal of Shabbos, we have kulas and Shulchan Aruch. You can eat peiros, mine targima. You can get away with a lot less for Shalashudis. There's even that one comment of the Magen Avraham in Hilchos Pesach that you could be Yotzei with Divrei Torah. A lot of people misuse that comment. They think that that applies every Shabbos, that you could just be Yotzei with Divrei Torah for Shalashudis.
But that's not true. The Magen Avraham Davka says in Hilchos Pesach. Anyone know why it comes up in Hilchos Pesach? Why Davka in Hilchos Pesach? Why would you ever need Divrei Torah for Shalosh? Just eat. What's so hard to eat? What? Pesach eat a lot? No. Erev Pesach, Shkalios B'Shabbos. You can't eat anything on Erev Pesach. You can't eat matzah. You can't eat chametz. None to eat. So they'll come up with all sorts of etzahs. What can you do for Shalosh Shudas? Magen Avraham says, okay, Divrei Torah. Our Chasam explains what he means is that it can't be that we were ever Messiah, that the Torah ever demanded Shalosh Shudas of us that Shabbos, because it's impossible to do. Selamai, you just learn, you know, just do other mitzvahs. Doesn't really mean you yotzei Shalosh Shudas, but anyway, you can get away with a lot less for Shalosh Shudas than you can during the rest. So says Rabbi Yosef Engel, if the Magen Avraham really wanted to make the statement that quality is better than quantity, you know what he should have said? Let's say you only have enough for one good meal or two shvacha meals. Then what should you do? Why didn't he give that case? And would he have said to eat with the one good meal rather than two shvach meals? Doesn't sound like it. Sounds like better to have the two shvach meals. Why? Quantity is really better than quality. All right, that's Rav Yosef Engel's discussion. But let's move on to the next answer of the Maral. All that was within this answer of the Maral, that the quantity of multiple murders that this man is one day going to commit ultimately adds up and leaves you with someone that deserves skila, rather than just Herod twice. He deserves skila. Says Maral, though, I have a further answer. And I read this Maral one way the first time I read it, and then a different way the second time I read it. So I'm curious to hear how you understood this Maral. On page Shin Mem Hei in the Maral, he says, Kol Zelo Tzarech, we don't need any of these answers. There's a better answer. By Ben Sora Mar, we say it's better for him to die while he's zakai rather than die when he's chayiv. Hainu sheyihia rodef. What does that mean? Better for him to die now rather than die when he's chayiv. What does it mean, rather than die when he's chayiv? When's he going to die chayiv? What are we talking about? He's going to die chayiv? What does that mean? So how did you understand that? And we're going to kill him? Or just whenever he dies, he will already be chayiv because he will have already lived the life of crime. What's the reference to? That he's going to better die now than to die chayiv. Is die chayiv that we're actually going to kill him? What? To die chayiv means that he will be chayiv misa. And so when's he going to die? When Bezin kills him?
After he does
the crime. So better to kill him now rather than... So whenever he dies, Lachar Me'ev Esrim, it will be after a life of crime,
right.
So he will die chayiv. I think it's possible that Maral is saying neither of those things. I was thinking along those lines, along both of those lines, at first. That either die chayiv means he's going to die, whenever he dies, after life, we're probably never going to catch him, you know, with Hasra and Edim, and actually, we're never going to be able to actually do that, but he's going to grow up to be a murderer, so whenever he dies, he's going to be chayiv. Or it might mean... Like Eitan and Judah were saying, that no, that he's going to, we will catch him, he'll be chayiv misa based in, and when we kill him, he's going to be dying as a chayiv. Maral seems to be saying something else, though. He says, Hainu, what does it mean? Al yomus chayiv? Sheyihye rodef. There's going to be a point in his life where he's about to kill somebody. Why? Because he's going to be a murderer. So he's going to, before he ever commits murder, he's going to be about to kill somebody. And at that moment, you're going to kill. Because you're allowed to kill a rodef. That's when he's going to die chayiv. Chayiv doesn't mean having committed the crime already. Chayiv means be willingly trying to commit the crime. At that moment, he's already chayiv. So you kill him as a rodef. And a rodef is mischayiv benafsha. And how does one kill a rodef? One kills a rodef, however you can. However you can stop him. If the only way to stop him is by, stabbing him in the eyeballs, stab him in the eyeball, whatever it is. There is no misa for a rodef. No given misa. Whatever it is to stop him. So he's putting himself in a position where he knows full well that you could stone him when he becomes a rodef. The Chiddush Ben Sarumara is that you can already do that now. You can already do the stoning that you'd be allowed to do when he's a rodef. You can already do that now. And that's why we give him skila. Because he's putting himself in a position where he is subject to the most heinous of misos. So we can right now give him the most heinous of misos. Question? Right, well, the Chiddush of Ben Sora Mor is that we're already considering him a Rodev at this early stage, even though he's not really a Rodev yet.
So why is there a difference between... So why now is he called Zakai and then Chayev?
Ah, good. So the Chiddush of Ben Sora Mor is that we treat him like a Rodev in terms of his onesh, but he's obviously not really a Rodev because he never chased anyone to kill them. So that's why he's Zakai. But he's Chayev when he's chasing someone to kill them. That's the Maral's answer. Now, yeah.
Do you still need the idea that the Nefashos lived because that's why he was killed?
Because of many people? Yeah. No. That's what I think. If you were to say, like Eitan and Judah were saying, then you would need that idea. Because they were saying, Yamas Zakai Val Yamas Chayev. Don't wait till he's Chayev Misen Bezdin. Well, when he's chayiv misen beis din, it's still not going to be skila, right? So says the Maral, no, yom zakai val yom chayiv means let him die zakai now, rather than having to kill him when he's a rodef and about to kill somebody else. At which point you're allowed to give him skila. So now just predate that skila a little bit, just move it back a few years, and give him the skila now.
Then why drop the skila?
Because you can do skila is the worst we can imagine. And you're allowed to do even that.
So why would you go out and do even
that? Ah, so what's the halacha by a real rodef? If I have the opportunity, the ability to kill him by skila, or by lethal injection, or by, I don't know, anything, are you allowed to choose the most heinous of the misos? The halacha by a rodef is that that's not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to stop him however you can, but if you can stop him more easily, you shouldn't do more severe. That is not the halacha by Rodev. You don't go more severe. So this kasha, amongst other kashas, Rav Yosef Engel, is a big Rav Yosef Engel, so Rav Yosef Engel is bothered by in Beis HaOtzar. So if you look in Beis HaOtzar, in the paragraph that begins Vida, on page 127, in Beis HaOtzar, so he says, Vida, Dikuf Divrei Hagur Aryeh, Hanau, Tzaruch Yin Ksas. But Masha Kasav, the Kivin Desof, Elias Rodev, our Rodev, Nita Nasil Benafsho, Bekal Miso, Yishachol Lamiso, Lachin Shapru Mischayev Gamat Haskila. Now, what's the vart by a Rodev? That since a Rodev, you can kill however you want to kill, so you can give this guy Skila now also. So you skip out a few lines. First one line, Lechora. Vekasha. Da'akati madu machmir nolav Lamiso b'skila. Dilmahi Misrami, Shamatli Misay Rak Misa Kala. Maybe when he would have been Rodev, you would have been able to shoot him without doing skila. So why don't we just shoot him now? Vim kein gam lanu in lahachmir la misafik largo misachamura. Why are we assuming that he's going, that if he becomes a Rodev, we're going to need to stop him with the most heinous of all misos? And therefore I'm allowed to do that now. Why don't you assume you'll be able to stop him with the least of all misos? And not only that, if the whole vart is that you're considering him a Rodev right now, but right now you know you can stop him with the least of all misos. He's a little kid. And you have him in court, chained up, you know? You could definitely stop him with the least of all misos. So isn't the din, if the whole point is that you're considering him a Rodev right now, I guess this is really the lumdus of what he's trying to analyze. What's the Maral really saying? Is the Maral saying, because one day he will be a Rodev, whatever you would give him then, just give it to him now? But he's not really a Rodev now? That the Chiddush Ben Sora Mor is, that because one day he will be a Rodev, take whatever you're going to do to him then and do it to him now? Or the way I've been saying it for the past 2 days, then not just take what you're going to do to him then and do it to him now, but already consider him a Rodev as early as now. He's started down a path whereby he will ultimately kill somebody, so he's already a Rodev. So if you say it the way I've been saying it, the second way, well, then this din makes no sense. Why should you give him skila? If the whole point is you're killing him now because right now he's a Rodev, so what do? Stop him with the easiest way you can, not with skila. But if you say that the vart is that it's not that you consider him a Rodev right now, how could you call him a Rodev? He's not chasing anybody. Well, the word is that since one day he will be a Rodef, the whole Chiddush Ben Tzora Mora is give him now the Misa that you will give him later. Well, at least we could open the door to the possibility that it will be Skila. You might give him Skila later, so give him Skila now. But says Rav Yosef Engel never understood it the way I said it. He never understood that right now he's a Rodef. He understood that, no, of course he's not a Rodef now. You're just going to give him the Misa that he will get as a Rodef, you'll give it to him now. Rav Yosef Engel said, it still doesn't make sense to give him Skila. It's still completely illogical to give him Skila. Because you don't know for sure that you're going to give him Skila when he is a Rodef. So how can you give him Skila now? So he says, first, he raised the possibility of what I said at the bottom. He says, maybe right now he's already a Rodef. And he says, that still doesn't help us. Why are you giving him Skila? You can stop him more easily. So in the next paragraph, he gives his answer, and I'm not sure if I understand it. He says, when we say Yamos Chayiv, means that he's going to die as a Rodef. So it could be that you will kill him as a Rodef with a lighter Misa, but the fact that you're allowed to kill him with a Misa Chamura tells you that you don't have to pay attention or be careful about how you kill him. That any way you kill him goes. And he knows that. And therefore, he is what we call being Matir Atzmo L'Misa. By being Rodef, he's basically saying, stone me, do whatever you want to me. I'm being Matir myself to suffer the worst. And that's why we're allowed to give him the worst. That's why the Torah gives him the worst. Because when a person is matir himself for something like that, you're then allowed to do that. He's making himself hefker l'skila by being a rodef. And therefore, mele, you're allowed to do skila, even though you could do any other type of misa also. By being mafker himself for skila, you're allowed to do skila. Very hard concept to understand. But he says there is a precedent for this concept. The precedent would be the din of sota. A sota is a woman who's suspected of cheating on her husband. Only problem is, if a woman actually cheats on her husband and we have Edim that saw it and there was Hasra, so that's easy. She's Chayiv Misa, right? That's no problem. Sota is a situation where there's no Edim. What happened? The husband warns her, I don't want you to hang out with that man anymore. Kinui, what we call Kinui. And she said, okay, fine, I won't do it. In front of two Edim, the husband warned her. And then two Edim saw that she had Stira. Stira just means Yichud, which, by the way, that's the source of Savik Tumah Bereshus HaYachid Tameh, because the Torah says that we assume the worst if she had Yichud, and the Torah calls it Tumah, her being Yachid or sleeping with this other guy. It calls it Tumah, even though it has nothing to do with Tumah. It calls it Tumah. So we learn from there, Savik Tumah Bereshus HaYachid is Tameh. That's an aside. What's the point? She's not going to be Chayiv Misa in the Beis Din. She can't be Chayiv Misa in the Beis Din. We don't have two Edim. So what do? We bring her to the Beis HaMikdash. She drinks a magical potion, and, you know, the sota pops. She explodes. It's my fifth grade Rebbe. I just remember what a sota was. Sota pop. Okay, good. I always remember it. So, Rabbi Zucker, South Shore. Anyway, so she's not Chayiv Misa. So how can we do this to her? How can we kill her? The very fact that she was willing to go through the process, that the husband said, I'm being Mekanyu, and she accepted it, shows us that she was Mafkir herself for that Misa. Once she's Mafkir herself for the Misa, then you're allowed to do it. So you see a little bit of a dimyo, that concept. That if a person's mafkir themselves to a certain misa for an avera that they did, then it becomes okay to give them that misa. So you suggest maybe that's what's going on. But it's not at all a comparison. Why is it not at all a comparison? Rav Yosef Engel picks up on this, why it's not a comparison at all. By the Ben Tzora Mora, who's killing him? Who's giving him skila? Beis Din. By the sota, who's killing her? Kodesh Baruch Hu. Right, we're giving her this magical potion, which probably doesn't taste good, but it shouldn't kill her. It's a nace that she dies
And that's Hashem. So they're like, that's Hashem's business. You know, that's not really our business. So that itself is not the most convincing teretz. It seems very difficult. This teretz of the Maharal is extraordinarily difficult to understand. The other point that Rav Yosef Engel makes that I wanted to emphasize, and I think we discussed it a little bit before, and I guess what we'll do on Sunday is we'll finish up the Yishmael issue and set up the sugya of Bab Machteres, so you don't walk in blind to Rav Bachman's shir on Bab Machteres, because he's likely to confuse us thoroughly, even when we're best prepared. But just one more point from the Beis HaOtzer over here, from Rav Yosef Engel. I think I mentioned that the concept of Ein Onesh Min HaDin, that we don't use a Kal V'Chomer to give an Onesh. What's the Svara for Ein Onesh Min HaDin? Because when we give an Onesh, the Onesh is not just meant to punish because we like to be evil and punish and hurt people. When we give an Onesh, it's really the best favor we could ever do for the person. Because through that onesh, the person is achieving kapara, and only through that onesh does the person achieve kapara. So you can't say, oh, if a person does a lesser aveira, they get malchus. Kal v'chomer, when they do a bigger aveira, they should get malchus. No, because when they do the bigger aveira, malchus might not be enough to give them kapara. And if it's not enough to give them kapara, then we're just stop beating the guy senseless. So we're not doing them any favors. Then the whole point of onesh is defeated. Asks Rav Yosef Engel, the Gemara in Sanhedrin 9 Gimel we're going to see soon. Gemara wants to learn, how do I know that if you see someone trying to kill somebody else, that you can kill the Rodev? How do I know? So the Gemara says, oh, there's a pasuk by Anara Marasa, that if you see a man about to rape a girl, you're allowed to kill the man to save the girl. Right? So Gemara says, ah, Kal V'Chomer. If I'm allowed to kill the man to save the girl from being raped, then for sure I should be allowed to kill a man to save the guy who's about to be killed. It's a Kal V'Chomer. So the Gemara says, that can't be the source. Why? Ein Onesh Min HaDin. Kal V'Chomer can't teach you to kill somebody. Can't give an onesh. Says Rav Yosef Engel, that marsha makes that line of the Gemara makes no sense. Because of this marsha, or the marsha makes no sense because of that line of the Gemara. Ein Onesh Min HaDin is only a din in giving somebody kapara. I can't assume that if for a lesser Avera the Onesh was enough to be Mechaper, that for a greater Avera this Onesh is also going to be enough to be Mechaper. When you kill a Rodev, you're not giving the guy Kapara anyway. All you're doing is saving somebody's life. There is no Kapara in killing a Rodev. He doesn't get Kapara. Remember, we set it up originally. L'mainaf Kamino, whether it's a din, whether Ben Sotomar is a din in Rodev or it's a din in pre-Onesh. Pre-Onesh has kapara. Rodev doesn't have kapara. There's no kapara in killing a Rodev. Why? Probably because when you kill him, he was about to kill somebody. Where's his kapara? By Mises Beis, didn't we make him do a vidui? We go through a whole process. That makes sense. A tshuva process. There's a reasonable kapara that's involved. So he says, Pashut, that's why, he says, unbelievable, that's why when the Maharal says, killing when he's zakai, don't kill him when he's chayiv, he must be talking about, what's the al yomus chayiv? It must be talking about, and don't wait till he's actually a rodef and you kill him then. Not what you were saying before, wait till we kill him in Beis Din. Because if we're killing him in Beis Din, he's not dying chayiv. If we kill him in Beis Din, he's dying zakai. Because that comes along with tshuva and kapara. The only way it could be Yomus Chayiv is if you're killing him as a Rodev, where he never gets any Kapara. That's why the Maharal thought that's Pshat in the Gemara. The Yomus Zakai Val Yomus Chayiv means when he's a Rodev. Because that's the only way the guy's ever going to die Chayiv. However, he has a Raya from a Gemara Baba Kama that maybe even killing a Rodev is a Kapara. We don't have time for that right now. He rejects the right anyway. All right, so I guess what we'll do again on Sunday, tomorrow, Rabbi Levin's going to be shir for the Yeshiva and making a siyum on Seder Moed and, you know, plowing through Shas or Hashem. And I'll do a parsha. Rabbi Kamenetsky will do Hashkafa Shmuz like always. On Sunday, Bli Neder, we'll finish up this last little piece with Yishmael, and we'll leave and move on to Bab Machteres, the next mission.
Well, how are you sure all together?